Fish Podcast, sponsored by Beer 52. Head to beer52.com/beer fridge. Get 8 craft beers, award-winning Ferment magazine, and an all-important snackaroo. Head to beer52.com/beer fridge. I'm also sponsored by This Week in Craft.beer. Head to thisweekincraft.beer and sign up to the weekly newsletter to find out all the new news in the craft beer scene and get hold of the new beers list as Sean Miguel shows his arse. Lovely jubbly. And head to all our social media pages, Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, search Beer Fridge Podcast, like, follow, share. And if you like a wee bit of YouTube, search Beer Fridge Podcast, subscribe, we appreciate that, and hit the ding-a-ling-a-ling to be notified of the latest videos, nearly said movies like I did last week.
The Beer Fridge Movie Channel.
Beer Fridge Movie Channel. Why do I keep going to say that? Don't know why. My name's Gavin Baxter. I've got Matt Dix, I've got Carl Muir, and I've got Scott McMillan. Good evening, gentlemen. How are we this evening?
Very well.
All good. To come up on this podcast, we're going to have a chat with the main man at Acid Brewing Cartel, the wizard that is Kieran. That's to come on the podcast. We're going to have a look at some things we chatted about kind of last week, the supermarket beers. We're going to have a taste test of the beers and the most expensive beer in supermarket history at the moment. Probably not history. the Omnipolo, the boys are going to taste test that live on the podcast. That's all coming up on the Beer Fridge Podcast. Right, gentlemen. That sounded like a real good like intro, like that last week, but didn't it?
All you needed there was a wee jingle.
I'm just waiting for, and now, our friends from Pearl Jam.
That's it. Oh, Bill Simmons.
That was better. I'm getting better this shit. Right, we're going to start off, as I mentioned, with Omnipolo. £8 a bottle from Morrison's. Oof, you may say, but Omnipolo requires the wallet, shall we say, if you're buying it at a bottle shop. Miguel, you've easily paid 15 quid for a bottle or a can of this Omnipolo, and now it's supermarket available. You three have now got it. You're going to taste test it and you're going to tell us a wee bit more. Gil, you look like you're ready to talk and tell us a wee bit more, if you could please.
I'm going to try very much so to tell you a bit about the brewery, if it would stop giving me psychedelic shit when I try it in the website, to corroborate myself. So apologies again for just right now for pronunciation, because this is going to be shite. Omnipolo. I can't. Hurdy-gurdy. founded 2010 by Henok Fente and Carol Grandin. Shared vision of changing the perception of beer forever. Brew a plethora of styles to explore what beer has and can become. It's a joint and equal partnership between a brewer and a graphic artist. Our creative process has come to resemble the workshop of other pop cultural expressions such as music. Beers are always a collaborative effort. We brew breweries all corners of the world, much like that. This approach means we get to stay curious, grounded and tuned in, much like that good house guest. Their stuff, so originally in Sweden, they've got imports in the US, Canada, and obviously now they've stretched to the UK. Some of their stuff is rightly pretty kind of highly priced. They do a variety of styles, cans, bottles, kegs, really good merch. This so happens to be Noah, which is probably one of their most famous beers, if not the most famous beer. That they've managed to pick up at Morrison's, which is incredible. I don't really understand how they've managed to pick that up in Morrison's. Still, such an incredible beer. I've tried some of the Bianca range before, which on their website, the blueberry maple pancake lassie comes in at €15 a can for a 4.40. The Bianca blackberry maple pancake lassie comes in at €15.20, and the other half, Captain Crispy's, which is a 4.5% Pilsner for a 440 ml can, comes in at €12. So to say it's exclusive is an understatement of the century.
It's one of those beers that or breweries that if they weren't doing this at Morrison's, you potentially would never try them.
Well, they might price a few people out. I think it was fair to say, but anybody who's worth their kind of salt has kind of tried this stuff or at least looked at it and thought I would like to try it. Whether or not
there's a difference between I would like to try and trying.
I would like to keep my marriage.
Yeah, even the thought of spending £8 on a 330ml bottle of beer brings me out in a cold sweat.
Well, if you're splitting it between people, then I suppose it's all right. This one, though, this took two to tell you about the story about me getting it. I had four bottles, a couple for the guys, and I got two for myself. This took two Morrison's trips. So I went with the handy dandy list that Mozza Beers gave it on Instagram. We had three Morrison's in Edinburgh had it. The Guile, which is obviously closest to us in Bathgate, went there. No Omnipolo, no even a hint of a label where Omnipolo used to be. A few other things for the new beer range that they had, but not this one. So then had taken Jade with me on the promise of we'll get a KFC in the road back, we're only going to the Guile. To they've not got this one in there, so it's a trip to Portobello Road, which is all the way around the bypass and around the other end. So all the way around there and in, and it was sitting there, it was like the Holy Grail. There was a text message saying, there are many smiley faces here available for purchase who would like one. And that's the dearest, it's definitely the most expensive beer purchase for the fewest beers that I've had. And I also tried to buy a couple of the other beers that Morrison's had got out, and they were so new that Morrison's had them out on the shelf but hadn't put them through the system yet. So I was unable to buy any of the other ones, but did pick up not many of the other ones anyway, but I did pick up these. Anyway, we'll move on to tasting, because this is 11%. It's an Imperial Stout. It has, based on my basic understanding of Swedish, it has vanilla, and that's it. And it's dark.
It's vanilla.
And it's 11%. And
what's the beer called, Scott?
Noah.
Noah.
Right. It's on the back. And what's upside down?
On the back, you've got Noah. On one side, you've got Omnipolo, and on the other side, you've got what reads pecan mud.
Yes, and I'm assuming that's what they're going for.
Right. Because it smells so nutty.
It's a pecan mud chocolate vanilla Imperial Stout.
It's so nutty. It's like supercharged Nutella.
No.
Even the dogs are getting excited.
For me, like right off the smell, I'm definitely getting the nut. Like you mentioned, there's a wee bit of sweetness to it as well. First couple of taste notes I've got, it's like a chocolate espresso is probably how I would like describe it best. As in, like, you get a real pack of coffee and the chocolate flavour coming through, and then the sweetness on the, like, a slight sweetness. It's not overly sweet, to be fair, but if it's either the pecan nuts or if it's the vanilla, I'm not too sure. But
there's a bit of kind of vanilla-y sweetness at the end. I do have the tasting notes. So Henock, one of the guys behind Omnipolo, says, when I was 12, I dreamed of becoming a pastry chef. Call this a creative outlet. Thick, rich, and excessively decadent, this beer aims to bring back childhood memories brewed with aromas. So it's an 11% stout. It was brewed at Brewery De Molen in the Netherlands, who have been involved in some Beer 52 boxes of late, who had mentioned as guys that know their stuff. And the artwork's class on it. It's just a smiley face. It's really kind of, it stands out, but it's also really simplistic. And the face that the smiley face makes is exactly the face that you make when you're drinking it. For me, the flavours are all there. It's got that kind of nutty, praline, chocolate, coffee, silky, smooth kind of mouthfeel as well.
Super smooth.
It hides 11% really well.
That's what I was just about to say. You can tell it's really hefty, and you can tell it's got a fair weight of alcohol behind it, but it doesn't taste alcoholic. It doesn't taste, strong of alcohol, which, regular listeners might know that I'm totally not into that, ABV for ABV's sake, and I'm going to make a 15% beer, but it just tastes like a spirit. Mm-hmm. But it's super decadent, like you say, super decadent and rich and thick, and but that totally belies the 11%, like, brilliant.
What I'm quite enjoying about it is that, if you put it, drink it, and kind of hold it across your tongue, there's a bit of carbonation to it. So it is sort of, I'm not going to say lagery, but it's got that, when you hold it, you've got a wee fizz, and you get that kind of chocolatey, coffee flavour kind of tickle on your tongue. It's really quite interesting. And, there's no way it's 11%. There's just no way. But it is 11%, of course. However, it does not taste that way.
You, Cal, obviously, I just watched you take a sip of that. Do you get the same kind of the mouthfeel?
Yeah, I mean, there's carbonation there, and that light lightens it a wee bit. Mm-hmm. For me, there's some beers that I've tried, some stouts, I'm trying to think,
use your words.
The one that we had at Gav's, I can't remember the name now for the fucking loving the money, it's just went totally blank.
The one from Sussex?
No, come back to me in a minute.
It's a dessert in a glass. The funny thing is, I know you've not got a chance to try it, Gav, and I think you would be quite an interesting one for you to try.
See, to be honest, I've tried to get it.
Bolt City.
Aye.
Sorry, is the one that I'm thinking. The Vault City Imperial Stout that we had and really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. At the episode that we had at yours, halfway through that, it starts to get really, and I think that the slight carbonation in this, whether I'm barking up the wrong tree or not, that might, it lightens it slightly and makes it easier to drink. It's not as much an effort it's not as rich, mm-hmm. overly rich.
So here's a question, have you guys all had yours refrigerated?
It's barely an hour and a half maybe in the fridge.
I had mine in the fridge door. Mine was in the fridge door, which is the warmest place in the fridge for about an hour and a half.
Mine's was sitting here since we started recording.
So the temperatures are fairly the same.
Probably. Mine doesn't overly.
Mine's is maybe slightly colder. Than the others,
So here's the big question. Here's the mass. Here is the be all and end all of this. Obviously, Omnipollo, a beer that and a brewery that their bottles, are very very high priced. If you get them at bottle shops, Morrison's selling for £8. Is it worth £8, Mark?
Yes.
Calm.
Yes.
Gilroy.
Yes, I would say so. I think £8 a steal compared to what? Not a steal, but if you're buying that at a bottle shop, let me try and do. Give me a second if you'll excuse my Googling quickly.
£8 for a supermarket beer is an obscene amount of cash, right? Because at the end of the day, what you deem a supermarket beer is mass-produced and not easily accessible. Now,
it's not a supermarket beer though, and they've done it 100% the right way. It's been plugged to fuck on social media, and all of the craft beer hounds out there are just would just be sniffing it out, and they'll obviously been super confident that whatever amount they're going to put on the shelves is going to go immediately, and that's it.
And they've made it exclusive to only certain stores. So, for example, the closest store to me, I live in the South Coast, I live about half hour east of Brighton. The closest store to me where I can get it is Camden in London, which is an easy hour and a half for me to try and get it. So they've made it exclusive, which can bump the price up a wee bit more. And being Omnipolo, they can bump up a wee bit more. So I think £8, like you said, Gil, was an absolute steal, and you're about to tell us a bit more.
So this equates to, on the website, so top Google return on this is that it's €9.20, which equates to £8.46.
Aye.
So we're getting there about the going rate, but I don't think, obviously, to get it here cost much more than that. It's definitely a loss leader. It's definitely to get beer geeks and the beer, like the Instagram, Facebook area of kind of beardom, if you like, to go and visit a Morrison's. And you know fine well that when that area, that the people that can spend, that can comfortably spend £8 on one bottle of beer, are only going buying one bottle of beer and walking away, which is where Morrison's are making their cash. They're then going and buying every other one in the range, because if it's got the Omnipolo, you guarantee it's fully stocked with everything else. If they put the Omnipolo there, it means it's getting a full craft consignment. You're getting people who aren't normally for that area or that postcode range to go in and pick up stuff for that store, who are then bumping up their prices. And those stores are rubbing their hands with glee because they've had people coming from out of their catchment area to come in and buy stuff.
Absolutely.
They'll probably have had people in their catchment area taking on online deliveries that they probably wouldn't have taken on otherwise to ensure that they get some. It's been a win-win, and I would like to see the results of the experiment overall to see if it warrants similar loss leaders, in the hope that it gets more stuff, because although it's probably in bottle shops and things like that, it would be a beer that in bottle shops that would go pretty quickly, because a lot of people know what it is and know how good it is. We've already spoken to a few kind of beer people in our area that have said that this beer is one of their favourite beers. It makes sense that it'll disappear from a bottle shop shelf pretty damn quick.
And you can rest assured that if that's in a bottle shop, if it's on their website at €9.40 or whatever, you can rest assured that if it's in a bottle shop in Scotland, it's going to be £12-13.
Exactly. Easy. Right, the folks are now going to go and speak to Kieran from Acid Brewing Cocktail. We're now joined by Kieran, our friend from Acid Brewing Cocktail. Good evening, mate. How you doing?
I'm class, man. How are you?
Very well. It's good to get you back on. And as we just mentioned before we start recording, you asked to come on because you've got some big news, but obviously you've been in the Daily Record as well. You've been online on the Daily Record. I've seen that.
Yes. I've actually forgot about that, man, that wee mention. That was class, man.
For one of the up-and-coming breweries in Scotland. Just want to say, we found them first. Fuck you, Daily Record.
We use big patch.
And he's back with some new beers coming out in the next, or coming soon anyway. You're the best man to talk about it, Kieran. Tell us what you got coming.
So I've got a well overdue beer. Obviously, during lockdown, I was attempting to get some brews sorted, but it's just impossible because breweries are just kind of focusing on their own stuff, which is understandable.
Mm-hmm. It was me thinking you had become a kombucha kingpin in the meantime.
I was going down the road. I was like, do you know what? I'm sacking a beer, man. Just going straight up to kombucha. It's the only thing I can make now. But I was actually doing some bottling work for Phil at Simple Things. So I was helping him bottle some beers, ended up with a good chat with him, and he was really, really open about me coming and brewing. So I've managed to brew something kind of different, but not too different.
I think it's really different, mate. From the notes you've just sent us, it looks like that. I can't personally think of anything in the market that's like this.
Yeah, it's unique in the sense that I went for a lot of hassle to kind of create the beer, and it's very much a kind of like a beer I want to make. It's very much like a kind of like beer geeky beer. So people who are obviously into the process and everything else are kind of like really into it. But yeah, so it's like a, it can't really be fitting into a style. It can literally just be described as like a kind of farmhouse summer ale. Again, you guys read the notes. I managed to get a hold of a really rare kind of unique mixed culture of yeast from Norway called Kveik. I know everybody, a lot of people has already heard about it, but the stuff I got was unisolated. So what you tend to find is like commercial breweries, when they use Kveik, it's like a single strain. But traditionally, Kveik is actually a mixed culture. So it's maybe made up with six other different strains, Saccharomyces, some other yeast strains that aren't really used for brewing, and then some bacteria cultures as well. So yeah, I managed to get a hold of this yeast, jumped through a lot of hoops to get it, man. It's it travelled quite far.
And imagine even with the kind of COVID and all that, that made it even harder for you to get hold of it.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was pretty sound who I was dealing with. He was kind of like, gave me a decent time frame, and I managed to get it within like a week or so. Luckily, Kveik is like insane when it comes to how well it can survive in particular conditions. Like it's just all borderline invincible. So having like a week to travel was perfectly fine for this yeast because it was dried. But yeah, I mean, COVID didn't really disrupt it too much, but it was always kind of in my head when I was ordering it. So I did give it a few weeks in advance to get it over.
I mean, so you can't say for certain that it is where the vaccine for COVID-19 is, but you have shipped a crate to the guys down at Oxford to test and stuff like that, just to make sure it's not in there.
Well, my.
You've not put it on the label, but you never know.
You never know, mate. You never know. It could, by the way, man. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if this was the cure for COVID. This used to be everything else, man. I'm not surprised it could cure diseases.
And there's the title for the podcast.
But yeah, man. So the basis of the beer came from me having a lot of time reading this book by a guy called Lars Marius Garshall, who is just a fascinating character, man. Like, if you don't follow him on Twitter, follow him on Twitter already. He's got a really funny profile picture of just literally his face, like, zoomed up, like, really, really close, where it's literally, I don't even think you can see his eyebrows, it's just, like, the top of his eyes and his teeth, and he's smiling so psychotically, like, it just looks fucking mental. But this guy who, he's not even, like, a professional brewer or, like, has any kind of higher education and any kind of, like, this kind of science. I believe he is a web designer from Norway who was just really interested in homebrew culture and started writing a blog. And his blog just slowly turned into a book. And then he just was literally traveling across Europe, trying to find farmhouse breweries across Europe that had specific kind of processes that were different from the modern process that people are used to. And finding these kind of like old cultures of yeast that's been handed down. It's even like from, again, a technical brew point, it's really interesting, but even from like historical, sociological, anthropological, and I'm not going to attempt to say that word, but it's fascinating, man. And like, it really delves into the history of like how brewing was such an integral part of all these kind of societies, like pre-industrial societies, and like, the yeast was one of the most important things because it turned grain into bread, also turned into beer, and ceremonies, weddings all revolved around this stuff. And especially in Norway, it is really interesting because even historically, they've got a really strong yeast sharing culture. Like at one point, it was the law that you could not sell yeast, like you could not exchange yeast for money, like you had to just give it away. So, all this kind of like passing down the yeast was really, really prominent. But the culture has almost died off. So like the farmhouse brewing culture nearly died off the early kind of 20th century. So there's still a couple of older people that are still kind of brewing. And it's these guys that Lars is like interviewing and goes to meet and brews beer with them. And they're not scientific at all. Like they don't take measurements. So like, when do you know when to add the yeast? And it's like when it's at blood temperature, it's like when I could put my elbow safely in the beer and it is exactly the same as my blood. And things like that. And he measures stuff and all this kind of things and managed to get a kind of rough idea of how the beer is made. But it's fascinating, man. And like these guys who are like just old men who are just, this is what they do, brewing, and they're now, their cultures of yeast are massively influencing this like kind of like farmhouse revival within the craft beer movement. And like, I honestly think in maybe the next 5 years, every single brewery, their house culture would be quake. Because one, it's extremely diverse. So you can make, you can make sour beer with it. You can make really, really nice IPAs. You can maybe make, you couldn't really make like a spicy saison, but you could do something along the lines of saisons. You can make a lager with it. So there's strains like a vape that you can make a lager with it. And one, the yeast is really resilient. It cuts down fermentation time by about 4 days. Conditioning time, probably cut in half as well. And it's just, you can pretty much ferment it at any temperature you want. Like,
really? Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because I'd done a bit of research before I made my homebrew. You know, it was just standard sort of London ale yeast that I used on my beer. I had done a bit of research, but what I read that yeast needs to be at like 30 degrees ferment. So that's obviously been bullshit, the stuff that I've been reading.
No. So like that's the preferred pitching temperature. So if you're with quake, the higher temperature you ferment it at, the more esters you get, but you can still ferment it low.
Right.
So I've done a quake at 20 degrees and it worked out fine. It was very clean. It was very clean, but again, if you do it at regular ale temps, like 20, 21, it will take a wee bit slower. But I brewed a beer last week. So I'm doing Collab Fest this year. So me and the Doghouse in Glasgow, we are brewing a beer together. Well, we have. Nice. And I used quake for that, but that was a quake isolate. I never got any of the kind of mad fancy shit for it. But we fermented that at 39 degrees, which is ludicrous. Like,
that's high, huh?
That's fucking high, mate. 39 degrees is hot. And I've not had a chance to taste it post-fermentation, post-fruit. But I was talking to Patrick. Obviously, Patrick has been on with you guys talking before. So it's been brewed through in camper van. And he had a taste of it and he's like, I'm actually hard to tell because it is literally warmer than my blood right now. Because I was just after fermentation. It's like, we're drinking like 39 degree beer. Like warm.
Just jump in there. I just have a bath in it. I don't
know exactly, man. Exactly. But,
that's the temperature of my bathtub.
Exactly, mate. Exactly. I've been really fascinated by it, and I'm always like, yeast is definitely my thing. I think I've spoke to you about it before. Like, that's the thing I'm massively interested in, and it's been really interesting just kind of delving into this kind of new. Although it's not new.
But old,
it's old. It's really old, but it's new to me and to new to a lot of people within it, which is I really like it, man. It's exciting.
It's good that it would turn into these things where people would go. Eventually people would go hunting for stuff and they search for something new, you eventually end up back where it started. You know what I mean? So like you go to where, well, what's closest, right? Okay, hops and stuff and the discovery of them, and let's explore them to the nth degree. And it's like, right, okay, I think we've got a handle on hops. Where do we go for here? Well, what did they use before they had hops to get flavour and to get aroma and to get something different and to make the beer that was brewed in whatever area it was or by whatever wee granny down the street or whatever it was that done it that made theirs special? Well, it must have been the yeast then, and there must have been whatever culture it is they started. It's the same way sourdough bread, like, right, okay, we've got bread to the nth degree, we've sussed it, let's go backwards and work our way back to the person that's had a sourdough starter since in 1880 or whatever it is, and it's still gone. And they've broke it off into bits and moved it to different places, which has then created something a bit different, and such has put this into it and that into it. And it's good that there's, you mentioned that the guy from Norway that's gone out and actually adding the science into it to measure it and try and track it and write it down. because a lot of that's been lost, or they thought it was lost. Like you're saying, it nearly disappeared off the face of the earth.
Yeah,
it's such a good, practice to get into, to go and find out what it is and measure it and write it down and just record it, so that other people can enjoy it and we can expand what we've got. It would have been such a shame for it to have disappeared off the face of the earth when the last person that has this strain or has this mixed culture passes away, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly. The one thing, reading through the notes that you sent through, obviously when you got hold of the yeast, etc., you tried it on your homebrew kit before you've obviously done this commercial kind of size. How has your recipe from your initial test, has it changed at all? Was there anything that popped up you thought, oh, let's tweak this a wee bit?
So the only difference was really the fermentation temperature. I gave it a quick try. I think I fermented it at 30 when I done it in my homebrew, but it was hard to kind of keep that consistent. I've not really got a decent kind of fermentation control. But I'm surprised at how close my homebrew was to the actual commercial brew. I'd say that obviously the commercial brew is better because we managed to ferment it at like 35 degrees, which was like a lot more esters. And it also gave the bacteria cultures a much better environment to sour the beer as well. So it's a bit more tart than what it was before. And also I found it in my homebrew version of it. It was just missing a bit of round, that kind of like a bit of rounded kind of flavour. I don't know what it was just missing a bit of bite. So I end up kind of dry hopping the commercial batch just lightly, man, like with just like a bit of citra, a bit of mandarina Bavaria. And it does add, because there's no bittering hops in it at all, it just adds like a wee bit of aroma and just a wee bit of kind of rounded flavour to it that kind of works well with the yeast and the tartness.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm honest, when I first tried it out the tank, I thought the hop, because it was only 2 grams per litre, which is literally nothing when you think of what dry hops are just now. It's like the kind of standard is like 8 grams per litre now for a lot of beers. But for me, it was a bit too much, but it's kind of died down now, which is great. So it's been in the bottle for almost a month and it seems to have kind of like mellowed itself out with the bitterness and the yeast is still kind of floating about, which is good. There's an interesting mouthfeel to it as well. Like, I find this week, think it's like, it's almost quite thick, man, quite viscous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a kind of like mixed fermentation element to it as well, because you always find that it doesn't manage to ferment right out. So there's always kind of like a wee bit of residual sugar kind of there, which adds a nice bit of body. But I'm happy. I'm happy the way it came out. And
you're buzzing it, mate. You can tell.
You can tell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, it seems like a total labour of love. It sounds like you've enjoyed it,
yeah,
a lot.
And I'm intrigued to see how it's received. I think like I want to kind of get the whole kind of story behind it, kind of pushed out, because I think people, once they kind of hear it, they're kind of intrigued about it and be like, I want to kind of taste what this is all about. The thing I was most chuffed about was that when I done the thread, bloody Lars commented on it, which was class.
Awesome.
Really? So the man commented on it, I was like, yes, man. But he pretty much just said, because I don't know if you've seen the thread, it was like, obviously talking about the book and how it made you want to try the yeast and stuff for that, and he just replied saying, like, this was the whole purpose of the book, and it was just to kind of like gain interest and make people think about using this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm really hoping that this kind of like mixed cultures of kvike become much more commercially available, because at the moment it's very difficult to get. But funnily enough, the person who I've actually got most of my kind of quite knowledge off of after Lars Marius Garshall is Jake from Upfront Brewing. So Jake has been studying quite for probably since Lars has been studying it, man. Like, Jake knows a lot about quite, man, and he has been giving me a lot of advice on it. So he's started to build up his own yeast bank. And his plan is to actually start selling it.
Right.
Okay.
But more so to, not so much for commercial purposes, I don't believe, but I think it's for on a kind of homebrew scale. So for homebrewers to kind of go and get it. But he's been experimenting with a lot of different stuff, and he's been giving me some good tips on it.
Please tell me you're going to send this larger bottle.
I might drop my message and see.
You'll have to. At least all
you've got it.
Yeah, it's probably not. That's a, it's based on a kind of Norwegian farmhouse ale, but it'll be like nothing like what they brew there.
No. So then say this is a Glaswegian farmhouse ale.
Exactly. I know, but because I was looking actually through the because Lars has got recipes in it, mm-hmm. and I was like, I cannot make any of those beers. So a lot of the farmhouse beers in Norway, they use, again, like you're saying before, like they didn't have hops, or any people that did have hops didn't really use them in the boil to make a hop tea or something. But before this, you used juniper. So juniper was the most used kind of herb in beer, but it was the branches. So they used the branches to make a juniper infusion. And then that also become a mash filter as well.
Wow.
Some fascinating stuff, but I was looking about, I was like, I wonder if I can get some juniper branches. But the more research that I've done, I was looking at it and there's like, you can get them obviously in Scotland, but there is also a very common kind of like juniper lookalike, which is super poisonous, man, like with so many people. And I'm like, I'm not risking that, man. I'm not creating like this mad death beer.
I was going to say, I keep picturing, and I was going to say that, like, I keep picturing your next brew where you haven't done the video and stuff in the last one. I think you should definitely do, now that you've proven how close your home brew was to the commercial brew, a la BrewDog and their kind of weird stuff for the apartments in New York and things like that. It's just you, a 5-gallon drum, a fire, and we take the water. We take the water directly from Loch Lomond and just put it straight in. So you could have your juniper. You could start your juniper filter and everything there. We'll make sure it's real juniper. We'll go to a gin distillery and something and get them hookers up with some juniper for it. But that's
I'm
your
up
next.
For that.
Your next farmhouse ale is full rustic.
Yeah, but see, funnily enough, at the end of this book, there's like a kind of reference to other kind of farmhouse ales in the UK, and apparently there's one up in Orkney. So there's Orkney Corn Ale, which I've never heard of. I've tried to do some research on it, cannot find anything on it. I've actually emailed Lars; he's not got back to me about this because I was like, "Fuck, man!" Like, if
who is it?
It's like a weird kind of traditional way of making ale, but there's not that much description on it, but Lars just has a kind of like a note to it that it does exist. And I was speaking to Jake about it and I was like, we need to go up to Orkney, man, like we need to see what's going on up here. We need to see with it, because they could have they could have a mad form of quake kind of kicking off, man, up there. And proper Scottish farmhouse brewing.
That would be good. That would be pretty cool, man.
There's a travel documentary, Gavin, for you.
Yes, it sounds. Yeah. Like,
we'll get some decent cameras in. We'll jump up to.
That sounds like a YouTube video ever, if I've heard one before. You can hear, like, you can definitely hear the passion coming through on this. It sounds, it's making us, or me personally, making me super excited for this to get my hands on it. And like you said, when consumers hear the story, we're getting excited for you as consumers to taste this beer. It sounds absolutely incredible, and I'm sure it will be, because you're just a fucking wizard, to be fair.
Aye, unbelievable. Again, I'm sure it is, and like you say, the getting to hear about it and hear the story behind it is going to interest not just, like you're saying, the kind of the process and the beer geek stuff, who you've already obviously got inside with the thread and the video and things like that, and us. But just like people who have an interest in what's in any kind of history or just different stuff, it's going to catch them as well, when you add in a bit of the story and a bit of the background behind it, and you've added stuff you've obviously added a unique take on it. Like you're saying, it's not a carbon copy of what Lars and stuff has got in his book,
no.
But it's taken that and it's twisted it and it's added Kieran's twist to it, which is something that only you can provide, and you've provided that on everything that we've tried so far. Everything we've had for acid brewing so far has always been a touch different to anything else we've ever tried, and this sounds like it's just like I've said before, a labour of love that you've added a bit more to. And that's no blonde smoke, it just is different. It is yours. You can tell your personality's in there.
Definitely.
And you can tell you're kind of right behind it, so
yeah,
desperate to try it.
Definitely. Remind us again, so Industrial Farmhouse, what ABV are we sitting at, mate?
So we're sitting at 6.9. So it's probably the highest ABV beer I've made commercially.
Are you going big bottles or are you going 330? Because you're changing the bottles. That's another thing. You're changing over bottles.
Yeah. So the only reason I'm doing bottles is because I couldn't get it canned, man. very difficult.
Well, here was me thinking it was to stick with the traditional farmhouse style. It was coming in bottles.
Well, so the reason I made this beer was because I couldn't get any beer canned. And I was like, do you know what? I might make something and put it in fancy bottles. And this is the perfect beer for it, man. Put a nice mixed film, kind of farmhouse cellar. Put it in nice fancy 375ml champagne bottles. I've got some new branding as well, so I've got
I was going to ask that new logo.
New logo, mate. Corey, I have a kind of new theme around the cans and around whatever more bottles that I do. But in fact, I actually should have sent you over the full label will look like with the new logo on it as well. I'll see if I can follow that on to you, but.
You hit the Daily Mail or whatever it is, the Daily Record, and it turns into big time having to change all your logos and merch and everything.
Well, this was well before. I've been planning this for months, man. I just couldn't get a beer out. That's the thing. It was like, trying to get somewhere to brew, and everyone's just like, no. Nah. Like, we're too busy selling hundreds of beer to Aldi and Lidl and buying every milk, man. I'm just like, I know.
Oh, stunning, yeah, stunning me. Well, the picture you've like and the stuff you sent over, there is a picture of the bottle. Mm-hmm. The label looks awesome. Like it screams Acid Brewing Cartel. But at the same time, like other stuff you've done before, it stands out from the crowd, nice and colourful, and it definitely shows off your personality, mate. It looks awesome. Looks very, very nice.
I'm going to ask, where are we going to be able to get it? Or where's folk going to be able to get it? I know you've got a release date and stuff, but like without.
So far, I've got a couple of pre-orders from the Good Spirits Company are definitely going to take some in Glasgow. Lost in Leith are going to have some. Who else? The Hanging Bat are going to have some on cask.
No.
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, Can you tell us when that's going to be?
So it's hopefully going to be a week in Thursday. It was meant to be this week, but I've had to kind of postpone it a wee bit. The issues with some getting it labelled, etc. So there's going to be two casks available in Scotland. So the Hanging Bat are going to have one, and Cool Shipyard in Glasgow are going to have a cask of it.
That's not going to last long, by the way. So if you're in Edinburgh, Glasgow, make sure you go there. Boys, you make sure you get the Hanging Bat. You're fucked.
The table at the Hanging Bat for next Thursday's already booked. So
it's going to be interesting. Like, I've already been telling people I'm putting some beer in cask, and everyone has literally just laughed in my face. which is exciting because I'm like, I love that shit, man. Like, I'll see how that goes down. It's something I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
Especially with something that's kind of based on something quite traditional. I was like, fuck it, man. Like, I've never had a sour beer on cask. I don't know how well it's going to go down, but I went for it, man. I've fired it in a couple of pins, and yeah, really? hopefully it goes down well.
The next question is,
when's the internet
going to work?
He's away.
Well,
are you there?
You back?
No. I'm here.
There you go. Go for it.
There you are. Go for it.
Next question is.
Sorry. Doesn't he asking? Carry on.
You asking?
I'm dancing.
Tito. But no, it sounds awesome, mate. I think we're all excited for you, and the fact that you're pushing these boundaries and. Well, you know what? Fuck it. I want to make a sour beer in the cask, and whether you like it or not, I'm doing it. It's awesome. You're gonna smash some fucking doors down, I'll tell you that with that. How is, obviously, with stuff you've done in the past, or the stuff you were doing before and the old branding now, how is the response to that been? Has it been positive?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, Passion for Acid done really well. It's probably been the best received beer I've made. Mm-hmm. It's been really interesting. I can't remember... I briefly spoke about it with you guys before when I was on with Amelie and stuff like that from Campervan. And I was saying that it's like, it had a kind of nice middle ground where it was like people who actually weren't super into sour beers really enjoyed it because it had a fruity nature. And then people who did like sour beers liked it because it was like really smashable. But those who are like into like super acidic beer had just been kind of slating it, being like, ah, man, this isn't sour enough and all this kind of stuff, which is like, just fair enough, man. Like, I'm never going to please everyone. And I was really happy with it. But it was interesting for me because I'd never done like a mixed fermentation beer, like having lactobacillus in with the yeast. Like, it's something I hadn't done before, and it was a good learning experience. And I've now kind of like worked on that, and again, this Norwegian kveik thing, there was lactobacillus mixed in with the yeast culture, so it's another mixed ferm beer. And then obviously for the collab fest, doing a mixed ferm beer as well. So it was a nice kind of learning experience from it, and it went really, really well, and it was cool having my beer kind of like a lot of places round about outside of Scotland actually took it.
That's good.
People like Brick Brewery took a keg of it.
Wow.
I think who else? There was like a wee shop in London, Tottenham Wines. They always kind of take a couple of my cases. There's like a strange kind of like food markets down in like the Midlands who took like 4 cases of it. Like just bizarre things like that, man. I've been getting a lot of people who are into like vegan beer because I'd say about 98% of my beers are all vegan. So I've had a couple of like vegan bloggers who'd like posted about it. So I think a lot of people who are looking for vegan products have been kind of taking it, which has been good. But I've been really, really happy with it. Passion for Acid has probably been the one that I've got the most traction on, and most people have kind of like now starting to notice me from that. Just try to build on that and just try and keep bringing beers out that often that people are still going to know that I exist.
To be honest, I think, sorry, Delk.
I was just going to ask, so obviously you've not been able to brew any of your sort of core range like recently. When can we expect another sort of batch of Passion for Acid and all that kind of hit and chill?
I'm hoping to start it next year, because my plan was not to really have a core range, but I've spoke to a couple of guys who like a wholesaler or somebody else, and they're like, why would you not brew more of this? Like, people are asking for it. It's like just sound business to brew a beer that people want.
Yep.
And I'm starting to kind of come round to that and be like, yeah, man, like I'm definitely might re-release this. The guy who's doing my designs for me, for my branding, Neil from Selected Works, he's kind of like done some mock-ups of potentially 330 cans, which I've never done.
Okay.
Which I might consider doing, and doing a couple of co-products in that sense.
I think that suits us sour. I think we've spoke about having 440s before, but as a kind of palate cleanser or a something in between or a something off the wall that's a bit different, a 330ml can is something that's sour like that is probably about the right volume, and it's probably where, like Brick Brewery, you've mentioned them already, their sours tend to come, especially the strawberry and cucumber one. And their passion fruit one comes in 330ml cans, and it's perfect. It's just it's the perfect size for the people that enjoy that. It's either that or, like you're saying, the big 375 champagne style bottles for the kind of rustic kind of going hell for leather type stuff is where sour kind of, for me anyway, it's felt more at home sitting at they kind of levels. It's quite good. 330ml cans is a positive for me. It's a good space to put a sour. As in that kind of container.
If I'm being honest, I never really drink a full 440ml of sour, to be honest. I always kind of either crack it with somebody else, share it. But for some reason, like, the market is just, the demand for 440s is mad. And I speak to a couple of shop owners and stuff like that. They always say that, like, 440s are now considered as, like, the premium. So it's almost like a kind of special, do you know what I mean?
And it's one thing. We always go on about like 330, I forgot that. And when it's in a 440, we're like, whoa, 440. But like you, the biddy say, a 330ml for a sour, just it suits.
Perfect.
But how many times I've tried a sour, like not liking many, to be fair, but I've tried a 440 and been like, got two mouthfuls in and been like, look, I've probably had enough of that now. And like,
we're drinking that now.
Like put it away. Like, you know, so I would be, for somebody that doesn't go out his way to find a sour beer, like I would be more inclined to pick up a 330 slower because you would think, oh well, if it's good then I'm going to drink it all, and if it's no, I'm not wasting it, you know, like that sort of thing.
Exactly.
You
need
it as
That's a good point. No, I don't know why I kind of labour it and keep you back, but the premium angle on stuff like that is probably a symptom of the supermarket stuff, because the supermarkets can only charge the 350 or the 4 quid, as we've now seen some supermarkets jump to, for a 440ml can. That's the premium is the 440 for a supermarket, so it makes sense that in a bottle shop, the 440s would sit premium. That's the kind of, that's taking up the premium shelf space, if you like, because that's what's taking up the premium shelf space in a supermarket now, is the stuff that can command £3, £3.50 and £4.
Talking about supermarket beers, Kieran, while you're here, you've probably, I know, in fact, everybody in the craft beer world has seen Tesco and Morrison's supermarket beer wars. What's your opinion of it all, mate?
So I actually got the heads up on the whole Morrison's getting Omnipolo in like last month. And basically, the company I work for was the one who was selling them all the beer. So I seen it, I was like, oh my God, man, like, Morrison's are getting Omnipolo's Noah. It's interesting, man, I've not really seen a lot of the new Tesco ones. Like, I know there's like a Vocation one. There's a couple of Northern Monks as well, Magic Rock. To be honest, man, like, it seems like people are getting a bit excited about beers that you could already kind of get from bottle shops.
Aye.
And it's like people travel to Annie's Land to get a Noah, when really all the other shops have got Noah. It's like, it's like a weird experience. It's more so for like experiencing the fact that you can go into a Tesco and pick up like something as amazing as Noah, because it's, for me, it's one of my favourite beers. But I don't know, man. It's cool that this option is there, and again, the more kind of like non-craft beer people that get a kind of entry level going through that, the better. But
you hope they jump to the bottle shops through there, don't you?
Yeah.
That's that. The one positive I've seen at it, and I know we'll probably get into it ourselves, but is the fact that Morrison's have pushed the jump to the 350 and 4 quid is becoming a regular, because I think the limit in it to £3 a can does so much in terms of deteriorating the quality that you can achieve. Whereas adding even an extra 50 pence or a quid onto that, we've seen it with the Evil Twin and Brewdog stuff, the Roaster Coaster, just how much a jump in quality that was between your next highest percentage Imperial Stout or whatever it was that was available at a supermarket for 3 quid at the time. The jump in quality for a pound or 50 pence is incredible.
Yeah.
So I think making that jump and that push is probably, for me, the biggest highlight in terms of a beer person is saying that you can go in and they've taken the step, because you normally are kind of cash is king kind of thing, trying to keep the price as low as possible. Whereas they've kind of made a bit of a concession, if you like, in saying we can charge for this, the extra for this beer.
Yeah.
It is interesting.
That was a bad start.
No. As consumers, we're excited anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I take it you guys don't obviously live in city centres, so you kind of like out.
You know,
right in the middle.
Yeah, so like obviously sometimes you don't have access to bottle shops. Do you know what I mean? And it's like it'd probably be great for guys like yourself who are only like living in a city centre and can literally walk 5 minutes to Grunt and Growler or walk 5 minutes to the Bat or Beer Hive or something and still get access to decent beer. I think it is kind of serving a purpose, and I hope it works out for the best and it kind of creates.
I hope so. I hope it doesn't dilute the market, as in the dilute the bottle shops and stuff, you know what I mean? Where they have to start bringing down prices because of the supermarkets and stuff. But it's competition, and competition is always healthy.
Yeah, true.
It's very, very healthy. But let's go back to you, mate. Obviously, your new stuff is coming out soon. The next week, maybe 2 weeks. 2 weeks? Have we seen 2 weeks?
A week and Thursday.
I'm
saying a week and Thursday so that it has to happen then. Once it's announced that it has to happen, I'm going to be doing my social media posts the end of this week.
When you get them up, we'll make sure we retweet them and whatever, repost them, whatever you call
class.
It. We'll put them up so people can get their hold on it. I've got a funny feeling it's not going to last very long.
I hope so, mate. I hope it doesn't last very long.
I've got a funny feeling they're going to fly off the shelf, mate, because from the sound of things, it sounds tremendous, and I cannot wait to put an order to get some stuff sent down.
Yeah,
it sounds incredible.
Yeah, I'm hopefully be able to get some on some online stores. Like, I've not had a chat with the regular guys who are selling my stuff during lockdown, but I don't see why they wouldn't kind of take some stuff. So, yeah, I'm sure you'll be able to get it somewhere.
Oh, don't you worry. I'll be placing plenty of orders, my friend. Don't you worry. After what you've just told us, definitely up for that. But make sure you go and follow Kieran and everything he's done. The Glasgow-based wizard of brewing. Acid Brewing Cartel on Instagram and Twitter to get all the updates on when we can see this lovely farmhouse. 6.9%. Get it in your belly with a big bowl. Oh, sounds awesome. Kieran, it's been a pleasure to have you on as always. You're always more than welcome to come on. And until next time, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, Kieran.
Right, let's head back to the main podcast and get more about the supermarket beer wars. Well, whilst we've got the positive side with Omnipolo for Morrison's, let's go to the other side of the spectrum, which is the slightly more negative side, which has been a more mixed reaction, shall we say, is the Guava Have Faith, so the Guava and Passion Fruit IP, 5.4% from Northern Monk, from the Twisted Edition, which I've had, Mark, you've had, Gilroy, you've had. We've put a poll up on Instagram this evening. So if you've had one of these yourself, you'll notice the sediment level is pretty fucking high. There's bits in that beer. I must admit, I've had three of these already. The first two I had, I didn't notice it. Probably because I wasn't looking for it, because I was probably half gassed when I tried them. And I've had one this evening. I just finished it. And you guys see me pour it out, the sediment level was pretty high. So we did
see when you swirled it in the glass, it looked like Stifler's pale ale.
Pretty much. And the poll kind of turned out as expected. So the basic poll was, is there too much sediment, yes or no? 79% of people said yes. 21 of people said no, but the thing that's really interesting from the no side, it's more breweries and brewers who have said no, whereas the yes has been more consumers and people that drink beer. Now, is that just an indication of how uneducated we are as consumers? And the fact that we're just so used to having either crisp, clean beers or super hazy juice bombs that when they have said it in a beer, we go, what the fuck is this?
Does it affect the taste?
I don't think so. I think it's a pretty good beer. The only thing that I think that this might, that they might have done is they have used the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the fruit has remained and the fruit is in the can. It's not a syrup, it's not an adjunct, it's not an additive that tastes like it, it's not a hop that just tastes like it. It has the fruit in there. If you've had any of the fruits, you know the fruit is quite pulpy.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have bits in it. It's not a thing, and if they're trying to maintain, I don't think it's a conscious effort by a brewery at all. If they have put the fruit in there and the fruit's remained, I think the reason that it surprises so many is that if you think about other supermarket content,
you're not used to it.
You're not used to that for supermarket content to any degree. But if you picked that, if somebody served you a pint of that in a tap room, you would probably say it's quite sedimenty, isn't it? The guy would go, aye, that's because we used fucking 14 ton of proper guava in it or whatever it was, you know what I mean? And this is the fruit that went in here. You can see them lying over there, they're getting ready to go in the bucket. And you would go, aye, okay, no problem.
What I think, the thing that strikes me about this whole situation that we've been discussing over the last few days, it just comes down to, see when folk, grow a carrot that's bent, or go a wonky strawberry or something like that, and the supermarket rejects it because it's not what it's supposed to look like. Maybe that's the kind of mind frame that we're in, is that, oh, that's not what a beer's meant to look like when I pull it out of a can. I don't really like the look of that. But it tastes fine.
And that's the thing I'm asking, like, because Northern Monk they produced probably, for me and Mark anyway, the best supermarket beer in Order of the Faith. And they come up with this and they go, whoa, what the fuck is that? There's bits in that, Delk.
I just, like, I'm going the other way, like, and I might be an uneducated answer, but I didn't enjoy, like, part of, like, the beer experience for me anyway is that, you know, when you pour something, you're like, that looks good, it tastes good, right, and then you enjoy it. When I poured that, and mine poured similarly to what yours did tonight, as in, like, it was like
chunk.
Literally, the end of the pour out the tin, it was like thump, as in, like, just sediment. And I'm just like, that didn't look that good. And I let it sit, and then I honestly, there's part of me was like, you know what I really wanted to do is get a wee spoon, just get a wee stir, you know what I
mean? Skip it all out.
And it just, for me, wasn't, the beer was okay at best, which it kind of pains me because I'm a huge Northern Monk fan, and it just wasn't overly, I didn't overly enjoy it. And put it this way, I honestly probably won't buy another tin of it.
For me personally, I had two before you guys brought it up, because I didn't notice it, and I enjoyed it. And then the one I've just had there, the now, I've noticed the sediment a lot more. I noticed it, especially like you're saying, Mark, when I poured it, it just kind of went glop, glop, glop at the end. I think the beer's fine. In fact, the beer is fine. There's nothing wrong with the beer. It's just we're not used to that sediment level on a supermarket beer, I feel. And just
I think that also leads into it, is that it's only fine.
Aye, it's fine.
If it was the most fruit that you have ever tasted in a beer, it tasted like you were taking chunks out the thing through the tree, then yes,
aye,
I can know that I would forgive it. And I just don't think, I don't understand why, like, how many cans have they tried in Morrison's? So if you think about Morrison's, like, it's a place you can, I just don't understand how you can get something with that much sediment into it on the shelf next to Moretti.
Aye.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's such a weird, when you think about the other stuff that's there, it's so clean, and that doesn't mean that it's no hazy, that it isn't a potential, it's not going to be unpasteurised, it's not going to be that kind of weird angle stuff that you only get in tap rooms. There's not going to be much that's Greek. Like, I've not seen anything Greek in a supermarket yet. There's nothing off the wall there, and then to have that much pulp in the bottom of it is just, and I don't think, the one thing I would say in it, the other thing I would say in its favour, is that I didn't taste the pulp when I was drinking it. I drank the whole thing. I drank everything that was in the glass. I didn't leave the stuff that was in the bottom, and I didn't taste it at the end. It wasn't like it tasted powdery. It wasn't like it tasted like orange juice with the bits in it. It just was there visually for me. Aye. And that might be different. I know Dixon, yours was pretty pulpy and had, you know, black bits in it, like bits for the fruit in it.
Seeds almost.
Which looked like it would be pretty heavy going. But mine, it didn't look the part. But it tasted okay. But again, I agree with you that it only tasted okay.
Okay, aye.
It wasn't a knockout of the park double IPA like we've had before, or like this Omnipolo stuff, or the Shoop that we've had, which is pretty good. Like, it's not drawn me away from any of the other Northern Monk stuff.
Aye, exactly.
I was going to, he's just left, but I was going to ask him for this purpose. If Calum's not had it, having heard everything that we have just said, are you more inclined to go and buy the beer now or not?
Oh, I'm not going to buy the beer, but that's got nothing to do with the sediment, because I trust you three's opinions that the beer is all right. And I'm guessing that it's a £3 tin of beer. So I'm not going to go and spend £3 on a tin of beer that's all right.
If you're south of the border, it's actually part of a fairly half decent deal. If you're south of the border, you can get four cans. You can, there's a mix and match kind of four can deal for £10. So you've got the guava.
Shut up.
And you've got
an absolute goon.
1 through 3 from Siren, which is.
Well, Gav, south of the border, how's your Omnipolo going down?
Well, I can't get it because I need to travel an hour and a half away. I've no idea.
Oh, boy. Well, you're not committed enough, obviously.
Ah, well, fuck you.
It was so good I've got another bottle.
Aye, but while you're down that, we're going to have a quick short break and we'll be back shortly where we're going to talk about some hits and misses from the supermarket beers. Yes, smell like coffee.
Just going to tell us Splingy's bags are on the street.
Right, we're back and we're going to find out what supermarket beers or new supermarket beers have been hits or misses. Let's start off with either go a hit or miss. Gilroy, you can start us off.
Hits or misses? So hits, I've got two easy ones because I've heard them tonight and they're the ones I've tried most recently. Hit, I would say Salt and Pomona Islands Shoop New England IPA, 6.4%. It says on the can that it's hazy and juicy, and that's exactly what it is. I think it's a Callum will correct me if I'm wrong because he kindly facilitated. It's a £3 can, is it? Or is it £3.50?
The shoot was £3.
£3. So a £3 can. I think it's. I've not tried the. What was the other one? The Vocation.
Mm-hmm.
And Magic Rock Number for a while, which I now know is out in 330ml cans and 4-packs.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember the name of it. Dixon will know the name of the can because it was one of his favourites. The multicoloured, the yellow can.
Right Times or Right City, Right something?
Something like that.
That was one of your favourites in terms of the New England IPA style. It's okay. It's good. That's a good beer. The other one that I would say was a kind of solid number was the Brewdog Triple Hazy. I think it knocks the Double Punk out of the park. Double Punk's a poor comparison, but Triple Hazy stood up to the mark. It's a lovely beer, 9.5%. They're my two most recent hits, if you like, so far. I'll let you go round the horn. If you like,
I'll jump in here with one I don't think any of you guys have tried yet, unfortunately, and hopefully you do get a chance. One of my hits that I managed to try last week, unfortunately, I'm not been able to get another can, is the Tram from Salt, which is a double New England IPA, 8%. This is available in Morrison's. Kind of a really super thick haze in the glass, a massive fruit aromas. The mouthfeel is kind of is nice and thick as well, but at the same time very, very smooth. But you get everything you'd expect from a NIPA, so massive kind of tropical notes on it as well. Thoroughly enjoyed that. I reckon that's one, if you get a chance at 8%, to definitely get your hands on. Delk, you got anything hit or miss at all?
The easy miss for me is the Fake Empire, the Brewdog, 6.2% hazy, sour hazy IPA. It is neither sour, it's neither hazy, and I would honestly say it's not really an IPA. To flip that on its head, it's actually quite a tasty beer. However, it doesn't do what it says on the tin. For me, it's a fruity pale ale, is the easiest way to describe it. And to be honest with you, I was pretty bored with it after the first three mouthfuls.
I agree with you, mate. Like, I bought it as well. I've had a try of it. It's not sour whatsoever, and I agree with you completely with that. But I reckon if they take the sour out of the name and just say it's, or the hazy, but just say it's an IPA, you'd be like, this is half decent. It's all right.
But it was really bland. It was really beige. Put it that way, for being a Brewdog beer, and you know, that's kind of, it's just unfortunate, I suppose. I'm trying to think of the other newer ones which I've just opened. Since I'm on Imperials tonight, the Northern Monk Lervik North Star Vanilla Cacao and Almond Imperial Stout 9%. And on the nose, I have marzipan from the almonds, which is absolutely delicious. Now, whether it
tastes... Chocolate Battenberg, Mark, is it?
Well, it's the closest smelling to a wee slice of Battenberg that I've had. So
it's a fairly hefty wee number. Obviously, it's a collab with Lervig as well. And with the hefty ABV, it looks like a winner, especially with the collaboration with Lervig. I'm not the best to examine a stout, so it's going to have to be you, I'm afraid.
Really sweet.
Yeah, you're on your own. I've not had it either.
Right.
It's really sweet. I'm getting a lot. Like, you actually do get to taste the kind of almonds coming through. Like, it is marzipan-y, which is nice. It isn't overly chocolatey, which is odd. I'm getting more of the vanilla and the almond.
Are you getting a bitterness?
Nah.
No?
No.
Because that's what I would expect cacao nibs to bring, would be bitterness.
Yeah. Whereas this has came out the fridge and it's icy. I mean, like, it's...
Aye, well, you might be a little warmer.
Okay. So that might be the issue with that one. Cal, what, any...
I haven't been able to sample any of the brand new ones as yet. I made a trip to Tesco this evening, and I've got two Buxton beers.
Mm-hmm.
I've got their double IPA, their Kingslayer double IPA, and I've got their Imperial Stout waiting. And I've also picked up the Drygate and Fierce collab, the Peanut Stout.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got those to try, but not tried yet.
Ooh. No, that's enough. Sounds good. I'm going to just go with two other ones that I'm going to say are good ones to get your hands off. You can do the Transient Northern Monk Hazy Double Dry Hop IP 7.4%. That has, every time it's been in the shop, it literally goes straight away. It just doesn't last very long, and doesn't last very long in my glass either. It's potentially up there with maybe the best beer in the supermarket at the moment. And the last one I'm going to big up is the one from the collab from North Brew and Salt, which is 1-3 IPA. This is a beer that you, it's 6%, excuse me. This is definitely a beer you could have a session on. You could have four or five of these. ABV is fairly mid-level, and you get everything you expect from maybe a wee bit of kind of tropical notes, a wee bit of sweetness, but not too bitter. Sits right in the mid-level of kind of IPAs. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable. You won't really be disappointed or wanting more from it. It will just do exactly what it says in the tin. So it's worth picking it up. I've already had, in fact, the season that I've had two of them, and they went down an absolute dream. Gil, you want any more you want to add or take away?
Yes, two misses. I've got two misses and then we'll end on a high.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a couple of misses here, one of which is the, let me scroll back to it, the Lervig. The Lervig Azaka kind of IPA number. I'm trying to remember exactly what percentage it was. I did tell you about it. It was a Simcoe.
6.3%,
the 330ml can. I was disappointed in it. I didn't think it was anywhere near the other 440s that I had that were supermarket level.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite fizzy. It was quite bitter. It wasn't juicy at all, I don't think. I didn't have anything to drink before it. That was my first can. I was expecting to be pleased because it was Lervig. I don't know whether it's because it's supermarket. I don't know whether it's...
Was it fresh out of the fridge?
Yes, it was. It had been chilling for a couple of days. It was.
And did it improve? It was, did it improve as it was in the glass, or?
No, not really. It was just a bit. It was just a bit. I don't know whether it maybe is because I had built Lervig up to be something super special because of how much I enjoyed them at family and friends in Manchester. That was a bit saddening to have had that. The other one was the Wild Child stuff, very briefly, explicit emphasis. So Real Ale Craft Beer did a thing on this. And I think, based on comments and based on having watched the video, has seems to be a weird can. No, too weird. I just think the minuses of the beer were emphasised in his can for some weird reason. It splashed back in his hand basically as he opened it. It poured like really kind of thin cola, like roller cola style cola. It was overly carbonated. And a three or roller four cola. Roller cola. It was like the, or up here, up north, if anybody's done any swimming, it was Panda Cola. back in the day was the wee bottles of Panda Cola, kind of like that, kind of thin, Crestle. Watery.
Was that what they were called?
I like run a bottle of cola past it. And that called it cola just based on that. It poured like that. It poured really fizzy. My can though, and it had no mouthfeel. Sorry, was the last one. It had no mouthfeel, so it was kind of like drinking cold tea, or kind of bad, overly fizzed cola, if you like. Mine was less so like that. It had a bit more mouthfeel. It had a bit more body. It did have a bit kind of salted caramel flavour to it. But it just wasn't what I was expecting. Having heard really good things about Wild Child, I don't know whether it's maybe the price point, or maybe just me. And again, no having a can that was 100%. But again, that's also an issue because you're thinking that if you get a supermarket can, you're expecting an equal level of flavour, regardless of whether you pick up can 100 or can 5003.
Yeah.
It should be the same all the way through. That's the whole point, and being able to expand yourself to that level. Don't know whether it's maybe an expansion too quick. I don't know. I'd like to try some more of their stuff at a bottle shop level to see if it's maybe a one off.
I'll tell you this right now. They did a brownie stout, which I tried at Brew London, and it was fucking spectacular. For someone who doesn't drink stouts, this was the best stout I've ever tasted. This was literally a brownie in a glass.
Which is maybe, but you never, haven't, obviously, you were invited as a guest to Brew London, which was good. Not that we've mentioned that much, but you were invited as a guest to Brew London, and I'd imagine it wasn't the equivalent of 440 mils for £3.
True. But to be fair, I tasted the early doors, but yes, I get where you're coming from, but I reckon that's potentially just upscaling, like you said.
And maybe it is, and I didn't want to, like, no brewery should be, I don't think anyway, I think any brewery that's gone into a supermarket, no, should be given a free pass, but if it's not the regular thing and it's their first attempt, it's and there is a bit of kind of, you've also got lockdown and various other things, that conditions that have never happened before. Anyway, a couple of kind of hits towards the end that I wanted to make sure and call out was Roadkill by Mad Squirrel. Their 6.5% New England IPA, which I thought was spectacular, and what might be the second most expensive beer available in the supermarket was a £4.50 bottle of Timmermans Oud Goose, which was a kind of gold winner at the last kind of beer awards in 2019. Comes out lovely. It's a lovely kind of Belgian style sour kind of, it's a totally different experience. It's a really good beer.
If it's a keeper.
Guys are in, it is a keeper in that kind of market. It was lovely. If you're into kind of sour stuff and things like that, go and get it. It's a different kind of take. It's not a kettle sour. It's not a adjunct sour. It's just like a lovely flavour.
Taste.
Yes, a very kind of rustic flavour to it. It's superb. So if you get the chance to go and pick that up, I would pick it up. And that's my last shout.
I'm going to quickly run through three that I've not tried, but I want to try. Just very, very quickly. Tesco's the Scaffold New England IPA, 6.5%. Northern Monk. Awesome. North Brew. Yep, the Green Curve Kvik IPA, 6.5%. I'm dying to get a hold of that. And last but not least, and Morrison's, the Modular from North Brew again, the IPA at 6%. There's three I've not managed to get my hands on. But if I do, I cannot wait to try them.
Oh, Layer Cake. I want to try Layer Cake. I've not tried that yet. That's a BrewDog number I've not tried yet. I quite fancy that. The Marshmallow Stout. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Mark, to interrupt, but looking at the pictures that you sent to the Layer Cake tin, having done the collab, the Roaster Coaster and Nitro Dip, that seems like a missed trick for me. A marshmallow stout that isn't nitro, that seems like a missed trick for me. That already seems as though it's going to fall short of where I think it could have reached.
Mm.
So that's quite a tricky one, I think, because marshmallow stout, so you're expecting the chocolate now for the stout in that, but marshmallow being like quite sweet, like it's quite a tough pairing, you know, like you're saying, you're drinking the chocolate and peanut butter kind of number. That's like a match made in heaven, isn't it? Like, whereas when you've got the chocolate and the sweetness, it can be quite...
I think
you'll be quite careful on how you pair that up. I'm getting that. But this is still really sweet.
I think the thing is, at the end of the day, as consumers... supermarkets having beers that are this good and that we can delve in and get in depth with the taste and really get in deep with what we like, what we don't like, which we wouldn't normally do with supermarket beers, or at least a year.
Boz Deep.
Aye.
Boz Deep.
You wouldn't think Boz Deep with supermarket beers like 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Your Boz Deep in supermarket beers was like... Well,
so 3 years ago, I'd have been sitting Boz Deep in the Corrie. So,
exactly.
Sarah Pramen or Moretti or...
The best you would have got is Sierra Nevada.
Thankfully, we have seen the light.
Aye. And thankfully, the supermarkets have seen the light. And they're now stepping up the game. Tesco's and Morrison's are knocking it at the park, regardless of who's winning it. In my opinion, it's potentially Morrison's, however. That means fuck all. But it's good though. It's good. As much as like you're getting bottle shop beer for supermarket prices, unless you're buying Omnipolo, which in fairness, you're still getting a good price.
I just want to say, I think we've got to be careful because the last couple of weeks, and I know it's what the trend is right now with supermarkets, but like if you do have a bottle shop nearby, I know Gav, you visit yours regularly and that, right? And I've got to admit, I can't remember the last time I was in a bottle shop, but at the same time, we'd go into the supermarket and kind of dipping your toe in to these particular kind of beers has got to lend you to then say, well, I like this style or I like this brewery.
Mm-hmm.
Let me find something else that they do and then go and find it. And then go and spend a bit of time and a wee bit of cash in the independent bottle shops that are kicking around because...
I think that's probably why independent bottle shops are maybe happy with what's happening because, like you said, if they find an IPA or a New England and they go, oh, I want to try something else, so look, where's my local bottle shop? Let's go in there and let's see what I can experiment with and find out what's new. Like, I find it hard, as much as the Omnipolo is £8 and it's a good deal for Omnipolo. Personally, I find it hard to spend £8 on a beer when I can go to the bottle shop and get two half decent good beers.
But you only get an Omnipolo beer for that?
No, I want. I can get an Abyss. I can get a Lost Peter. I can maybe get something from Drop Project.
No, but it's a one off.
Oh yeah, 100%. But that's the selling point. It's a one off.
But that's what I'm saying. Paying that amount of money for a beer, once every month or every couple of weeks or whatever, it's fair enough. But, you're just not going to then, it's hard to then say, well, I'm going to go back. But to be, and I say that, but man, I've been in Luvians and St Andrews plenty of times, and like we bought a couple of bottles of sellers, like we bought the Vault City stuff, 11-12 quid a bottle. Like if you're happy to do that for Vault City, then you're going to do that for Omnipole as well, aren't you?
I think the best way for us four to think about it is, if you think the start of the podcast, we would never, ever, ever, ever think of putting and having a conversation about supermarket beers on the podcast because the beers were shit. True. That's just it. And now, at this stage in the podcast, 2 and a bit years on, the beers are good and they're half decent and they're worth talking about.
And if they're not good, then we'll mention that as well. And that's the whole point as well, isn't it? That's the message.
Exactly. Real beers, real breweries, real opinions in the bod beer podcast, yeah? The beer fridge podcast. Wait,
what was that?
I don't know what
that was. Klingon.
That was the bod beer podcast. The beer fridge podcast, as always. Right, it's, as always, head over to Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, search Beer Fridge Podcast, like, follow and share. And if you want to head over to the, in fact, don't, if you want to, head over to our YouTube page where you're watching videos of cats and people failing of the week. You can subscribe and hit that ding-a-ling-a-ling on the Beer Fridge Podcast YouTube page and be notified of all the latest YouTube videos that are available to you, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get it from, whether it be Spotify, iTunes, or wherever. And until next time on the Beer Fridge Podcast, you can go to beer52.com/beerfridge and get 8 craft beers, award-winning Ferment magazine, and that all-important
Snuggeroo!
beer52.com/beerfridge. This week in craft.beer as well, for our latest comings and goings in the craft beer scene and the new beers list as well. And until next time, a pleasure as always. Thanks for Kieran for joining us from Acid Brewing Cartel. It's been an absolute joy. This has been a good one. It's been a long one, but it's been good. But until next time, goodbye.
Hello.